The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley coming up here. France's fake news law. We'll get to that. Just a little bit, but I had to hit this because of the whole to do about the president canceling the Philadelphia Eagles visit to the White House after it was learned that less than 10 of the Eagles were going to show, according to the NFL Network. Mike Garofalo last night said, no, you know, Trump was right. It was in response to what the Eagles told him. The Eagles told him, look, hardly anybody's going to show. Well, then fine, I'm canceling it. The left's going crazy at the president. Look, they're the ones who initiated and said, look, hardly ever anybody's going to show. And as Mike Garofalo of the NFL Network said, it wasn't 30, it wasn't 20, it wasn't even 10. He didn't have an exact number, but it was less than 10 we're actually going to show to the White House. Well, the reason I bring this up is because the other stories out there that, again, Adam Silver, the NBA, before game one, was asked, are you going to change your national anthem policy? Are you going to let the players protest in the NBA?
Right.
You've got all the NBA players coming down on President Trump on a consistent basis. It's horrible what he's saying about the NFL. We disagree with the NFL policy.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Steve Kerr, the coach at Golden State, who was seemingly completely and totally clueless as to what the rule was in his own league as he was criticizing the NFL. And when we were playing part of his audio last week, stating, Mr. Kerr, are you in the real world? Do you understand that the rule that the NBA has is actually more strict than the rule in the NFL? The last 2 years, where are the players that hate Trump and support the NFL players? Where are they breaking the rules and being fined but willing to sacrifice it in order to bow beneath the tabernacle of Colin Kaepernick? Where is it? They're talking a lot. But as we know in the NBA, you have to stand. So, Silver is speaking before, you know, the game one of the NBA Finals.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. Quote, of course, I've watched what the NFL has done. I feel they're in a very different situation than the NBA is in. Of course, we've had a rule on our books that precedes David Stern, the former commissioner. It was put in place by Commissioner Larry O'Brien in the early 1980s. From my standpoint, it's been about respect. Respect for the institution, respect for the fans, respect for the country that these players are playing in, end of quote, Silver said. Where's the outrage from the NBA? How is that different than what any of the owners of the NFL have said with the new rule or what Trump has talked about?
Right.
Where's the difference?
Well, now it's going to have to become a thing. There's going to have to be, the activists are going to have to come after the NBA. The commissioner has spoken.
In the case of the NBA, of course, 25% of our league is comprised of players who aren't American, so it's hard to say that in the case of the NBA, it's about patriotism when a quarter of our players aren't even American, but we viewed it, and we collectively have viewed it as a moment of unity in our arenas. Frankly, it's been a different dialogue in the NBA than it's been in the NFL. Our emphasis has at least been on the constructive activities in our communities. There's been no discussion with our players' association about changing our existing rule. Where's that different from the NFL? By the way, the NHL plays both the American and Canadian national anthem. People stand for both. Why? Out of respect.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the entire thing. You mentioned people being from the commissioner mentions people from other nations playing in the NFL, in the NBA. You do it out of respect.
And they have it right here. Silver's comments come days after Golden State Warriors head coach Steve Kerr ripped, this is from Fox News, ripped the NFL over its anthem policy, seemingly unaware of his own league's rules. Quote, they're just playing to their fan base, and they're basically trying to use the anthem as fake patriotism, nationalism, scaring people, Kerr said of the NFL. It's idiotic, but that's how the NFL handled their business. Then he applauded the NBA for handling social justice matters better than the NFL, according to ESPN. I'm proud to be in a league that understands patriotism is about free speech, Kerr said. As we said, Mr. Kerr, have you paid attention to your league's own rules? There is no free speech in the NBA. By the rule that you must stand for the flag and your definition of what free speech is, Mr. Kerr. It's about peaceful protesting. The NBA, Steve Kerr, won't allow you to peacefully protest while the national anthem is playing. I think our leaders in the NBA understand that when an NFL player is kneeling, they were kneeling to protest police brutality, to promote racial inequality. It doesn't matter. The NBA rule that you abide by, Mr. Kerr, will not allow NBA players to do that. You pretend that it doesn't exist. This is where liberals are in a delusional world of their own.
Well, because what's better than having to join a protest? They can't really join the protest in the NFL. So in the NBA, they just say they support them. We support and ignore the truth, the very reality of that rule in place that keeps them from doing the same thing.
I mean, from the leftist point, I'm going to play from the left, okay? I'm going to pretend I'm from the left now.
All right.
And this is about a free speech issue. Shouldn't the left, because what Adam Silver is trying to say is that in the NBA, they've had this oppressive rule for 35 years, mm-hmm. So it's moral because their oppressive rule has existed for 35 years.
Yeah.
So since their oppressive free speech rule has existed for 35 years, they are on a moral high ground compared to the NFL, who has changed their policy to being oppressive. But being oppressive in the... Am I missing something here, or do I have it?
No, I don't think
do
so.
Do I have it from the leftist point of view? Why isn't the left screaming at the NBA and telling LeBron James, you've got to kneel? LeBron James has insulted the president left and right over this particular issue. Fine. Then kneel, LeBron.
Either kneel in protest to break the rule.
Right.
Or then petition the NBA to change their rule.
Right. And nobody's petitioning the NBA to change their oppressive rule, according to the left. Mm-hmm. And so we just have to break these things down because they pretend that it doesn't exist. That's why you and I took on Steve Kerr last week from the Golden State Warriors and said, what type of delusional world does he live in? I mean, does reality, are they so, I have to ask this, Eric, is somebody like Steve Kerr in such a tunnel vision where he doesn't see what's around him, he only sees what he dislikes that is out of his sphere that he is in every single day?
I think he knows that, again, it's easier to say you support them than it is to deal with the real work of either petitioning the NBA to change that rule or encouraging your organization to break the rule. What's really hard? Well, doing things, actually protesting, you know, in the case of the protesters, they would tell you that. But what's even harder than that is when you're breaking the rule, right?
Steve Kerr, if you have an ounce of guts, you would tell your entire team to kneel during the national anthem and break the NBA rule if you had an ounce of guts.
Mm-hmm. Or lead the petition to change the rule.
Lead the... But no! No! Come on, let's go all the way.
You want him to break the rule. By the way, is it a fine? It would be a fine.
It'd be a fine, right? Yeah. But he should be screaming about the NBA rule, and he's not. He's only talking about the NFL. He's not talking about the oppressive NBA,
who's had the rule in place for a while.
For over 35 years, they've had the rule in effect, and he doesn't view that as oppressive. Well, as long as the oppressive rule has been in for the longest time, well, then we're different than the NFL.
So it's either he knows about, okay, he knows about the rule.
Of course he does.
Either he knows about the rule or he's the most clueless coach on the planet. And given where the Warriors are right now, I'm guessing.
He's not. But all we're asking for is consistency on the left. You know, Steve Kerr, Adam Silver, LeBron James, any of the NBA players who have just eviscerated President Trump over his stand on the NFL.
Uh-huh.
For God's sakes, at least be consistent.
Walk the walk.
Will liberals ever walk the walk? Will they ever be consistent? Will they ever be able to put out a message where you could say, okay, your message seems to me, I disagree with your message, but at least you're consistent with the message, and you don't live in this delusional world where you're accusing somebody of being in an oppressive state when the standards that you apply to them are the oppressive standards by your leftist views that you've been living with going on four decades now. And you seem not to want to recognize that or even discuss it.
I mean, are you going to support your colleagues in the NFL, your friends in the NFL? They're not colleagues, but your friends in the NFL? You're gonna support the cause? Or are you just gonna talk about it?
Or just pretend that you do. Yeah. We're just gonna pretend that we support it. We're gonna pretend to be outraged, but we won't walk the walk. Why? Because our league has a rule, and our oppressive rule has been in effect for 35 years, which makes it more moral than the NFL rule that just came into effect. The longer a rule is oppressive, the better that it is.
Yeah, the more we're likely to abide by it.
And by the way, if you just got into the middle of the conversation, we don't really feel that the rule is oppressive. We're just going from the leftist point of view. From the NBA, who is the NBA and Golden State Warriors coach Steve Kerr and the players, LeBron James, other that have gone after the president. Yet the rule in the NBA, as we made clear last week, is much more strict than the NFL rule that lets you stay in the locker room. In the NBA, you've got to stand for the national anthem. You have no choice. You've got to stand.
Mm-hmm.
You don't even have a choice. It's more oppressive from the leftist standard. Yet no outcry at the NBA. We believe that all the leftist organizations out there, with the NBA season winding down very, very soon, but with still at least, what, 3 games left? That there ought to be massive protest outside of the NBA arenas.
Yeah. And let's start during the finals.
Let's start it during the finals.
Those remaining 2 games.
Steve Kerr, you're up. What are they up, 2-0?
Yes.
You're up 2-0 in the series. All of your teams should kneel.
Yes.
And therefore be suspended by Adam Silver for games.
Yeah, you only got 2 games to go.
For games 4 and 5. and 6 and 7.
There won't be a 6 and 7.
Sweep. All we're trying to do is help.
We're very helpful people.
We're very helpful people.
The station that cares.
Yes, we're just trying to help here.
Yeah.
We're trying to help the left just, you know, be consistent with their ideas that they promote.
Right. We're just looking to help. That's it. We wake up every day. What can we do to help the left?
Every day.
All right.
I'm done. 866-90-RED-EYE.
In 2017, 41.4% of road check violations were a result of issues related to vehicle brake systems. Not only is it important to keep your brake system in tip-top shape to avoid being placed out of service, it's necessary in order to keep your vehicle running at optimal performance. Here is a tip to keep your brake system in the best shape possible. Drain your air tanks daily. Brake system air tanks, while often overlooked, are a crucial part of proper maintenance. Pay attention to the amount of water and contaminants that escape. Too much moisture in the tanks is not good and can indicate that the air dryer is not functioning properly. The next CVSA International Road Check is June 5th through the 7th, so be sure to get inspected today.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Wow. France's fake news law leaves media experts uneasy. This is a draft law. France is the latest country attempting to fight fake news with legislation. Opponents say the law won't work, could be used to silence critics. The draft law, designed to stop what the government calls manipulation of information in the run-up to elections, will be debated in Parliament Thursday with a view to put being put in action during next year's European parliamentary polls. The idea for the bill came straight from the president, who was targeted during the 2017 campaign with online rumors that he was gay and had a secret bank account in the Bahamas.
Hmm.
Under the law, French authorities would be able to immediately halt the publication of information deemed to be false ahead of elections. Social media networks would have to introduce measures to allow users to flag up false reports, pass their data on such articles to authorities, and make their efforts against fake news. The law would authorize the state to take foreign broadcasters off the air if they were attempting to destabilize France. A measure seemingly aimed at the Russian state-backed outlet Russia Today in particular, which means Ed Schultz wouldn't be in France.
You would ban Ed Schultz in France, basically. Well, but think about it. If you're trying to influence an election, there are people from all over the world that have opinions about other countries during their election cycle.
Look, when you talk about fake news, I bet you I can read... I could pick out 10 stories in the next 10 minutes and find that the stories might be 80% true and 20% false. Is that fake news?
Well, there's the question. Who determines that?
Who determines that?
Who are the fact finders here? The fact checkers in this case, which would essentially be run by the government.
What if the headline, what about clickbaiting? The headline gives you one direction you believe the story's going, you get to the body of the article and it's not at all close to what the headline says.
Right.
How many times do we encounter that? Is that fake news?
If you say this president or this politician is a horrible leader, does the government flag that? Does somebody else flag it on social media? What you're requiring is social media to go in and change it for your country. Essentially, they're going to have to go in and change their pages and their users' profiles in those countries. How do you do that?
I knew this was going to happen. You know, there's always the call. Well, the government needs to come in. So the biggest liars are the ones that need to monitor the second biggest liars.
Right. Exactly. And what happens, so if somebody else tells a lie, but nobody flags it on Facebook or social media, nobody flags it, and it's posted again and again and again, or shared again and again and again, who pays for that? The person who posts or Facebook?
trying to save society. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara, Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley, 866-90 of Red Eye. Yeah, so interesting, the proposed law in France, the fake news law. Been in the media now. What's it going on for me? 29 years in talk this year. 36 generally in the media is what I've been in. Because you have so many different forms of media, fake news is much more prominent than it was before. Because anybody, because when you look at fake news, anybody can have a blog. How many different websites are there? So while there's probably more truth out there, there's also more fake news just because there are tens of thousands of more media outlets. That being said, one of the things that you and I have talked about to prove that fake news is there is the fact of the polling that was done a year ago that showed that, I think at the time it was 56-57% of Democrats believed that the Republicans actually hacked into the election machines. And 2 months ago they did it again. It was closer to two-thirds now of Democrats believe that the Russians actually hacked into election machines. Now, the interesting thing is, find a story where that exists. Find a story where that's actually written. You probably can't from any major media publication. So fake news just doesn't come from the official news sources, and you and I were just talking about the fact that we could probably pick out 10 stories, and how many headlines could we pick out that the headline doesn't match what the story actually says, the old clickbaiting to get you to read it. And in essence, it's fake news because the clickbait tries to send you in a direction that's more controversial. You get to the article, and you're like, what? But then we find out how many people just read the headlines. What was that statistic that came out? It was an enormous number of people only read the headlines. They actually don't read the article.
Right.
That being said, censorship or the government cracking down on fake news is the worst way to go because they're the biggest liars. The last thing I want are the biggest liars trying to censor what they believe the truth is. That's the last thing I want. Well, we'll articulate to the people, we'll articulate to the masses what the truth is. Uh-uh. You guys and gals, you're the biggest liars. You don't get a say.
And how long before, you know, that would turn into, well, we believe that's false or that's false representation if it's just an opinion? Someone issues an opinion.
Oh, yeah. Of course it goes to that next.
Mm-hmm. There's no way it doesn't.
Right.
So you give government that kind of control, well, then at that point, you've lost all the free speech.
Well, look, I'll give you an example. James Clapper lied to Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Clapper says, oh, no, I wasn't lying. I just thought it was something else. Who makes that decision of what's the truth?
Someone, who was it that wrote it? I think it was Molly Hemingway. I think it was. Lying liar James Clapper is lying about the lies that he lied about before. Or something like that. It was just a brilliant tweet.
When you see the way that the question was asked, the reason we call him a liar is because when you look at the entire context of the question that was asked by Representative Wyden, a Democrat, obviously, when you find out the truth and where he was positioned in the government, you know that he was lying.
Yeah. Yep.
You're looking at, okay, no, he was lying. Juries make decisions based on who they think is being truthful and who else is lying.
Right.
So when it comes to that, does the government get to make the decision Or is it the fact that, nope, you let the media go and people will eventually, hopefully, fact check themselves? We see that many people don't, but as we've said, the biggest, and look, we, you know, we believe that when headlines were written for a year saying the Mueller investigation investigating whether Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election and what led up to it. The question is, did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election? Well, it's not fake news. We're asking the question. What's the question based on? Where's the allegation? You and I talked about this back in the January of 2017. We said, where'd the story come from? Where'd it just appear out of? But it was constantly said and asked of, as a question over and over again, where you have the to the point where just 2 months ago, two-thirds of Democrats believed that the Russians actually hacked the election machines.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find a story that says that anywhere.
No.
You can find stories where they ask the question, or the question is, did Trump collude with the Russians to hack the election? But you can't find any specific story that says, we did research and we found out that the allegation is the Russians actually hacked into the election machines in 2016. Yet two-thirds of Democrats believe that. So people are going to believe whatever they wish to believe, whether there's ever even been a fact-based story on it.
And that's the power of the false narrative when that narrative is carried primarily by the media. Again, yep. They have to do is put the headline up. Just post the headline.
And you and I have always mentioned that because I don't know of a, I don't know of anything that is believed by the American public more than that, that is completely and totally false. You and I have always used that as an example of how fake news may be spread by a media narrative that is asking a question, not actually making a statement. But by asking the question, you have to ask, well, wait a minute, where's the evidence that got you to the point of asking the question? Where is the specific allegation that makes you ask that question?
Right.
That didn't exist.
Nope.
If we really want to get into the minutiae of what drives fake news, are we now going to say, okay, that question was asked, therefore that's fake news, because you have to back that question up with, well, where's the evidence for you to even ask that question to begin with?
Well, because that's based on a false premise. The whole thing was. Still, no one has identified the crime. In the entire year, over a year now, that Mueller's been in place at work, no one has done that, but the media doesn't care. If this were Mueller investigating the Clinton campaign, a special investigator, a special prosecutor on the Clinton campaign, had she won, the media would be tearing it apart. If it were something of this nature, the difference is we can actually point to, in the email case, we can point to exactly where she broke the law.
To us here at Red Eye, the problem is not that fake news exists. It's people's willingness to believe it.
Well,
it's people not doing their own fact checking.
And the Democrats are going to depend on those people in the fall of this year and 2 years from this November.
You and I sat here a few years ago with Jade Helm, what was it, 15?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was 3 years ago.
Yep.
How many calls did we get from people that said, you guys are idiots, this is really happening? We said, no, it's not.
No, it's not. But it didn't matter.
Didn't matter.
People were motivated. There was a tremendous amount of energy surrounding that whole thing.
People were furious that we were mocking it. Now there's a secret thing going on, Jade Helm 15, do you know that? Well, the one story I'll never forget is they're going to do these special forces exercises on private property. Mm. Well, yeah, but you left out a very important part of it. They asked the people, whether they could do it on their private property, and they were willing to pay them and take care of any of the damages, and they specifically wished to use their property, the Special Forces did, because they looked at the landscape and said, this is the type of landscape and geography that we need to do training on. We'll pay you for it or whatever. It's top secret. Well, it isn't that top secret because you know about it. And also, we brought up, remember, where the county where a lot of it was actually going to be done, the Special Forces training, the Chamber of Commerce had already figured out the economic benefit of this completely, totally secret Jade Helm 15 that was the plan to take over. Was it Texas, America? I forgot what it was. With the,
I think they were going to start with Texas, move on to New Mexico, yes, then Oklahoma, you know. The narrative, by the way, changed, as it often does during conspiracy theories.
Right. But how many people were willing to believe that crap? And so that's the problem. The problem isn't that fake news will always exist. People will always exaggerate on opinion columns. And opinion columns will come across as, you know, with extremely radical viewpoints that will attempt to come across as fact-based, but is not. It's you, the consumer. You have to ask your question. Do I want truth or do I want propaganda?
Right.
Dad told me people want to be BS'd. Mm-hmm. You're going to find that out. Man, I was a young, idealistic teenager, and I was furious at my father for saying that. Said, no, they don't. He goes, you're going to find out they do.
Yeah.
Now I realize, I see it every day, people do.
Yeah.
They wish to buy into a narrative that isn't true because, I don't know, because that's never been me. That's the last thing I'd ever want to do is
buy into. Well, in the case of, the whole Russian collusion thing, I mean, it fits what you want to happen, right? What you wish to happen. Have this guy removed from office.
Well, yeah, in order to destroy the candidate that you hate.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I can see the motive there.
It works to that point. So why ask the questions? Why actually would you look for the facts? Keep the narrative going. Because to that end, you basically become an operative of the Democratic Party. And you're hoping that enough people will be motivated. If he isn't removed before then, they'll be motivated in 2020. So, which is exactly what the party wants. Exactly what the party wants.
Until the country starts figuring out that there's nothing there,
mm-hmm,
as they have.
Well, and there's the big drop on this whole thing. Once it comes crashing to the ground, then what does the left do? I actually think this is part of what's behind it. At least a couple of the liberals who have been saying over the last month or so they need to quit, you know, attacking Trump. You're motivating his base. I think they may be worried there's nothing there.
Oh yeah.
And what they're looking at is we got to move away from this thing because once it does crash, the party's going to have the Democrats. They'll have to have some kind of positioning, some kind of statement, some kind of real campaign. What will that be?
Disneyland doesn't pay enough?
Exactly.
$15
an hour.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Eric Carly, I'm Gary McMurray. Let's go to Ken in California. Ken, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Ken.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
You know, you guys are talking about the fake news law over in France. I was just going to mention, in California right now, there is a quote-unquote fake news law being proposed by Senator Richard Pan, and it's basically the exact same thing as the law in France that you guys are talking about being proposed. And it says, to mitigate the spread of false information, through news stories, the utilization of fact checkers to verify news stories, providing outreach to social media users, and placing a warning on a news story containing false information. This is Bill. This is Senate Bill 1424.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I remember the Senate, the Assembly bill that was back a couple of months ago. I don't know if they were targeting internet bots, though, but this is another bill?
Yeah, this is another bill. This is a Senate bill, 1424.
Yeah, the last thing I want are the biggest liars trying to monitor and tell us what the truths are.
Yeah, thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
We appreciate it. Yeah. Because beyond that, then they start judging opinions. Then they start judging anything and everything. The government basically controlling free speech. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Not for that.
Nope.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. In the news today, well, look at this headline here. Citing anthem protest, President Trump has disinvited Eagles to the White House. All right, now this is from NBC 10 in Philadelphia.
All right, President
Trump rescinded the White House visit for the Eagles, citing player boycotts and national anthem protest for his reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 24 hours before the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles were set to visit the White House, President Donald Trump rescinded their invitation, citing national anthem protests and boycotts from some team members. Now, is that the actual truth? Since we were just talking about the fake news bill, the proposed law in France, we had the caller talk about. And by the way, I did some research. There's been a couple of fake news bills in the California Senate and Assembly that didn't go anywhere. But we were talking about the one in France and saying, wait a minute, we're going to let the politicians, the ultimate liars, be the arbiters of truth. Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
But when we talk about fake news in general, is that actually what happened? Did the president, cause that's what you got when I woke up last night and started reading the different headlines and started reading the stories. It seemed like the president just arbitrarily said, you know, something, less than 24 hours, I'm just going to screw these guys over and just rescind it now because they probably have prepared everything and I'm a mean president and I'm just going to rescind it, you know, rescind this invitation. Right? That's what you sort of get.
Yeah, and I was thinking, it's based on just a handful of players, which wouldn't be fair because the majority of the team wanted to go. No.
Well, that actually isn't the case of what drove this. And this is from the NFL network and Mike Garofalo, who actually read the statement from the president and then gave the background on it that it was the Philadelphia Eagles who contacted the president and let him know very few people are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So here it is.
We got the notice from the White House, a statement from the White House saying the Philadelphia Eagles are, quote, unable to come to the White House with their full team to be celebrated tomorrow. They disagree with their president because he insists that they should proudly stand for the national anthem, hand on heart, in honor of the great men and women of our military and the people of our country. The Eagles wanted to send a smaller delegation, but the 1,000 fans planning to attend the event deserve better. Those fans are still invited to the White House to be part of a different type of ceremony, one that will honor our great country, pay tribute to the heroes who fight to protect it, and loudly and proudly play the national anthem. I will be there at 3 o'clock p.m. with the United States Marine Band and the United States Army Chorus to celebrate America. And I, that would be the president, Donald Trump. That is a statement directly from him. Now, let me fill in some background for you here, because this is information that we were mining this evening. The Eagles did make that decision that Trump talks about in that statement to send a smaller delegation. What happened was they had conversations amongst their players and their staff the last couple of weeks. There were a lot of ideas being kicked around. Some players said, well, we can all go down as a team. Certain guys can go to the White House. Other guys can go do some things maybe in the community or meet with lawmakers. Or other guys can go sightsee but still make it a team trip, even though not everyone would go to the White House. That was one idea being kicked around. In the end, Jeff Lurie decided that he didn't want to make it a sideshow and wanted to keep this contingent really small. I did not get an exact number, but I was told it wasn't 20, it wasn't 10, it was going to be less than that. Obviously, that decision by the team and by Jeffrey Lurie did not please Donald Trump and the White House.
Yeah, it's
a little bit of a different story that it was, oh, everything was okay, and then the president just said, oh, you guys can't come because a few of you won't be there. As Mike Garofalo points out from NFL Network, the word came down, sorry, less than 10 people will be there, and he said, well, then fine, it's done.
Well, and that's a team decision,
yes.
By the way.
Majority of the team decision.
That's the whole thing. You're going to hold that for, because here's what they wanted. They wanted that photo op of a handful of players standing next to the president.
Right.
They wanted that. That was, in fact, the design. Now they're saying, well, he's a coward for disinviting the ones that wanted to go. The majority, you can't apply that to the rest of the team? The majority of the team that didn't want to go?
As the Philadelphia fan who called us, who's a very, very loyal fan and very happy that the Eagles won the Super Bowl, he said, supposed to be the team.
Well, and there you have it. By the way, the you know, they called the White House, hey, nobody's coming. Only got a handful of people. So whoever decided to make that call, at least they did that out of respect. And the president wasn't going to expect an entire team or most of the team and then have a handful. This is what they wanted. What they wanted was that photo op of just a few players. That would have been the headline for the weekend. Instead, it's Trump's the bad guy for disinviting those few players. He's the bully. He's the coward. Well, wait a minute. The coward? So the people who don't want to go, they're not cowards? Who decided it? It's the majority of the team, which is a team decision. Right. That's them acting as a team, we're not going to go. For whatever reason, whether it's about kneeling or not, whether it's about the national anthem or not, it's, I think, widely known that the Eagles players have been very vocal against this president. They don't like his policies.
And by the way, we note, we didn't get a chance to talk about a couple of days ago when Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, came out and said, we're not going to change our rule whatsoever. And our rule is everybody must stand for the national anthem. We just point that out because Steve Kerr, the Golden State Warriors, who are now in the finals right now, we expect then that Steve, naturally, after his, very, very pointed negative remarks at the NFL, and as we pointed out, seemingly completely unaware of his own NBA's oppressive rules and regulations for himself and his players, we believe that they should all kneel and be fined at the third game of the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
So there you go. But they seem to believe in the NBA that since their oppressive rule has existed for over 35 years, the oppressiveness and the longevity of the oppressive rule is what makes it more moral than the NFL. Seriously,
mm-hmm.
That's what they're trying to get you to believe. Well, the NFL, they're just horrible for what they're doing. Our law, it's more oppressive, but it's been in longer. Therefore, it makes it more moral. Oh, okay. Thanks. I understand that.
Because it's so much easier to say you support something rather than to actually do something.
Support it, right.
Yeah.
And as we said, where are the NBA players who have been extremely critical of this president and the NFL, where have they been protesting and been willing to be fined and break their own rule? As Adam Silver said, there has been zero discussion with the NBA Players Association concerning this rule. Where's the anger? Or is it just all yap, 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 yap?
Right.
We'll yell at them. We'll yell at the NFL. We'll say they're wrong, but don't ask us to do it. What? Money out of my pocket? No, can't do it. They're horrible. We have more of an oppressive rule. Yeah, but we've had it longer. This is why you can't argue with the left. If you want an example of why you can't argue with them, that's how their thought process goes. Meanwhile, other news out there, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 Monday for the baker who refused to make a custom cake for a same-sex wedding out of religious belief. Justice Kennedy wrote the affirmative decision on it. He also wrote the legalizing of same-sex marriage, and by the way, was the same one who would, and at Wall Street Journal accused him of eating his words yesterday because he had said, but of course, all religious freedom, even with the gay marriage, all religious freedom will be protected. And it said that he had to eat his words yesterday because we saw exactly where they went, with this, which was, okay, anybody who disagrees with us or anybody who doesn't wish to participate in it, we're going to punish them also. Now, this rule was a narrow ruling, not in the vote, but in the scope of the actual ruling, where mm-hmm. it seems, and again, you and I went through a number of different analysis on this from greater legal experts than us who have been studying the Supreme Court, for years. But it does seem that a precedent has been set to protect the artistic abilities of somebody who bakes a cake, that there actually isn't the design of a cake.
Right.
And what you do in it, that is viewed as art. And the other point is that these human rights groups, these laws, as Kennedy pointed out, you can't sit there and say that somebody must bake a cake to support gay marriage, but then when somebody complains that they can't get a cake baked for insulting gay marriage, that you protect that. You can't go both ways. That government, it seems he was writing in his decision that government isn't capable of figuring out the offensiveness of religious items or religious dogma. That seemed to be what they're doing now. Again, some people have agreed that it was a decision that was way, way too short.
Mm-hmm.
Others said, well, it's in the right direction. I sort of think they used a scalpel here, but it's going in the right direction of where you wish it to go.
Well, and that's the thing is, we were, as we discussed this before, and that scalpel approach could be, the case with a number of these similar cases, any of them that get to the Supreme Court level. And because the point was made that no decision was made on the larger point or the larger question, could the cake baker, could they deny service in general to same-sex couples? Well, that wasn't the case here. And they did not decide that yesterday with this ruling. But I wonder if they'll ever decide that. I don't know. There's not a case right now that we can find that's on its way to the Supreme Court. There may be one in the future, but I don't know that they address that with any of these other cases that come up. It seems like they just really wanted to walk on eggshells here. There was one opinion, one analysis that was saying, as you mentioned, Kennedy, falling short and mm-hmm. really just kind of leaving this huge gray area or a lot of questions from the actual opinion, the ruling. And so what does that do in the state of Colorado? Does the Human Rights Commission now review cases? Can they go back? Because the one thing they left open, too, was the fact that by bringing it up, they leave it open. The fact that this actually happened before gay marriage was legal in Colorado. But what they didn't say was what would be different now because gay marriage is legal in every state. And could the Human Rights Commission in Colorado, could they rule differently with these considerations with the current law, with the current, I guess, status of gay marriage?
And if you see Kennedy's decision, it seems like the main crux of it was this council, this Human Rights Commission, was so bigoted against religion in general that they just couldn't give a fair hearing in any way.
Right.
Because they blamed religion in general, said, okay, this could lead to a Holocaust.
Yes, the comments and, made by some of those.
And Kennedy said, this is just, and this was agreed upon by the, you know, by the seven, that it was ridiculous. But in that decision was the fact that he had a right. It seemed that they really didn't touch whether you had to bake a cake. Mm-hmm. Because this was a baker who was willing to bake a cake. He was willing to bake a cake. He was willing to bake whatever anybody wanted, but there were things he wouldn't do. He wouldn't custom bake a cake for Halloween.
Right.
He didn't believe in doing that. He wouldn't bake a cake that insulted gays.
By the way, and he also offered some assistance with that wedding with other items.
Yes. And so what it came down to was the fact that there was so much bigotry of religion in general on that Human Rights Commission, and the fact that, yeah, you do have artistic rights, and the fact that the commission, the question was, we don't believe that government actually can figure out the offensiveness of religious statements, of religious expression.
Right.
And so it seemed to be going in the right direction, but there is a great debate right now as to what precedent it actually set.
Well, yeah. That's,
did it set any precedent, or was it just applied to this case, and any case in the future would have to fit the exact same parameters of this baker?
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Two USDA disaster programs are now open for sign-up through the Farm Service Agency. This is FSA Acting Deputy Administrator Brad Carman.
Congress passed and the President signed the Bipartisan Budget Act and made several changes to these disaster programs. The Livestock Indemnity Program and the Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish Program, and that's why we're reopening sign-up.
Applications for both programs are being accepted for calendar years 2017 and 2018. Producers who have submitted previous applications and received decisions do not need to file again, but can reapply if they suffered additional losses or their application was disapproved due to a late filing. Carbon says producers applying or reapplying for either LIP or ELAP should provide their local FSA office acceptable documentation about their operation. For example, verifiable production records. Yet he adds,
you can work with the county office, and we most likely can find acceptable documentation for you to prove there are livestock death losses.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Sad note, former San Francisco 49ers receiver Dwight Clark died yesterday at the age of 61 after a battle with ALS. He had just announced it. Don't know how long he knew he had it, but he announced it just 15 months ago. Hmm. Any Cowboys fan will, any 49ers fan will always know him. And so will every Dallas Cowboys fan for the catch back in 1981 when it looked like Montana was throwing the ball, looked like he was throwing the ball away, and all of a sudden his hands reach up and grab the ball and help to win that AFC Championship game. But just so sad. I saw the final party that they had for him. Former owner Eddie DeBartolo had it in Montana at his ranch and brought a bunch of former players in, and it was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
But, just so sad.
Yeah, his wife Kelly was on his Twitter account essentially and made the statement yesterday, and it was just really sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 866-90-RED-EYE for Omnitrax. Here is your national forecast.
We're looking at significant rainfall over the next week from the northern plains in through the Midwest and the Northeast. South Florida will see heavy rainfall throughout the week. Not looking for much in the way of rain in the Four Corners region or California, Nevada, or Utah. Also heavy rain in store for the Washington-Oregon coast. For your Tuesday, the heaviest showers will be located up along I-90 in Montana. Now, that could extend over I-15 north and south into portions of Idaho. Also, an area of low pressure in North Texas will create some unsettled weather for northeastern Texas and central Oklahoma. Moisture in that region often means the pop-up thunderstorm variety this time of year. A stationary front in and along I-10 will keep things on the cloudy side from eastern Texas into Jacksonville, Florida. And there's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Scare people. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley, Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. You know, you and I were talking about the death of Dwight Clark, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, who died of ALS. And I looked at you and I just said, you know, we look at all the other diseases out there and the advancements they've made, and it seems like there's hardly been anything on ALS. And it's true, there's hardly been anything. I mean, there's one drug that may keep some people alive an extra, you know, 4 or 5 months with ALS. And it's interesting because when you look at the statistics of ALS, the vast majority of people who get it are in their, you know, late 50s and 60s. 9 out of 10 are white men.
Mm. Wow.
And, you know, so they talk about the fact that they're hopefully optimistic. But they said, we were back in the early 90s, too, when we found that it was a genetic mutation that helped cause, you know, ALS. And 25 years later, we still haven't, you know, all the drugs that they went through, all the hundreds of drugs, and they found out none of them worked. None of them did anything. And you see the frustration of researchers out there. And they talk about the fact that, you know, some of the new discoveries and the fact that they have pinpointed one of the key genetic causes of the disease. And they've begun sorting through to an unprecedented degree the way that the mutation plays out inside the brain's motor neuron cells. Also, Johns Hopkins has been doing it for the last couple of years, a new undertaking where they're getting everything, an information repository of all the highly detailed data and images of 1,000 patients from all over the country, and they want to get everything. They want to get in one spot all the information on everything about ALS and all the medical technology, everything that's been tried. They want everything in one place, and they believe that that may help it. But as of right now, you know, still and there are other diseases, but it's that one disease. I mean, even in you know, you think about cancer. We've made, you know, the survivability of so many cancers. We've given the survivability rate on many cancers, given you a longer time to have a period of quality of life. Some we can't cure, but there have been some advances. But if you look at ALS, as I said, except for the one drug that can extend your life 5 to 6 months.
Well, and this nothing. Is what I think probably is the most confounding problem is the beginning of, you know, where you start. If you're someone that is a researcher, you're trying to find, you know, as they put all that data together, you're trying to find, I guess, those common elements that each of those patients might have. You shared with us some stats there, but there are two different types, I guess, of ALS, one being sporadic and the other being familial, the 90 to 95% of those cases are sporadic, which means they didn't inherit the gene from a parent.
That's a great point. They make that in this one article I was reading here.
So that's, you know, the problem becomes, again, I would think, I mean, just from a layman's perspective, that you know, you're now trying to solve this huge puzzle of, all right, what is it? Where are what are the common, I guess, elements, environments, traits, or makeups of any of these patients?
Let me correct something. I said 9 out of 10. 6 in 10 victims are men. 9 in 10 are white.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Yeah, okay. And so when, you know, you look at that, we, of course, think of the late Stephen Hawking passing earlier this year. The guitarist, Jason Becker, who has lived decades, I think it's 27 or 28 years. But those are rare cases. You know, Stephen Hawking and a Jason Becker. Jason Becker lost his ability to speak in 1996. He and his dad came up with a computer program where he can actually spell out words with eye movement. He can use his computer program and uses it actually to write music and communicate.
Steve Gleason from the New Orleans Saints, who has had, I think now it's 7 or 8 years with ALS, and I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary on him.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just called Gleason. I believe it's just devastating because they go through it was a documentary that was done from the very beginning when he was just diagnosed and was completely normal and follows him all the way through. I think probably the first 5 years, because I saw it maybe 2 years ago. So that would, if it's 7 or 8 years now, would have been about 5 years. That five-year section of seeing him go from where he was to where he is now. And I'm telling you, it's devastating because they, you know, they're inside the house. You see, you know, his wife and what she has to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, you know, it's a documentary worth seeing, but it's devastating to watch. It really is.
They did one on Jason Becker. It's the same thing. They kind of, they go back. There was a clip from a home movie that they had where you could tell his, that there was something going on with his legs. They didn't know what was going on at the time, but shortly after, you know, that video was taken, they did, and he was about to go out on the road with David Lee Roth. David Lee Roth had left Van Halen, and he was going to be a member of David Lee Roth's band, and of course that was all, that career was cut short. But the fact that he has remained alive all these years still creates music. He put out, in fact, there's a series of guitars, signature guitars, and the fret markers on the guitars are colored dots, which represents his computer program that he uses to communicate and write music. And so, along with his father and his family, you know, he's like Stephen Hawking. He is somebody who has outlasted the statistics with such a horrible disease, but also remained productive to the extent that he could.
And I, you know, you want to make sure you word it in the correct way, but it has to be, you know, a great wonderment to medical scientists as to why somebody like Stephen Hawking could live so long with it, or others can live, as you just mentioned, can live so long with it, and why others can't. And you would think, and you would hope, but it doesn't seem they've been able to figure out, okay, why was this person able to live 30 years with it, and this person last 2 to 3 years?
Right.
What is the, you know, what is there anything we can learn because of the longevity of one person that may help us? Is there something, you know, some chemical or more of it in their system that helps keep them alive? And so it has to be, when you think about, you know, how long this disease has been in the public consciousness as part of our culture. You go all the way back to Lou Gehrig in the 1930s, and you think about it, and there really hasn't been, as I mentioned earlier, except for the one drug that can extend the life maybe by 5 or 6 months, there's been nothing. I mean, it really has to be something. It has to be fascinating in science to cover and at the same time incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Can't imagine.
So just thought we'd bring that up because that's the first question that popped into my mind is, of all the diseases out there that, you know, there's really been nothing on, you wonder, you know, you wonder why.
By the way, almost 150 years, a French researcher discovered it in 1869. So, you know, since discovering the disease itself, it's 150 years later.
Yeah, the disease existed before that, but they just didn't.
Yeah, and so when you have, you know, when you think about that, I mean, for everything that we've accomplished, there's so many, you know, medical mysteries with the human body that we're still discovering. Let's, you know, hope and pray they do find those cures.
You know, one of the documentary programs on the History Channel I love was the men who built America, about all the early billionaires. Mm-hmm. And you and I had this discussion one time where we said, you know, something compared to the way that they live, we live like the billionaires of 150 years ago.
Oh, everything that we have available to us?
Everything that we have available today, we have the quality of life that a billionaire had. Mm-hmm. Nobody thinks of it that way because 150 years ago, you really didn't have any access to medicine.
Right.
There really wasn't great medicine at that time at all. None of it. Mm-hmm. You didn't have refrigeration. There were a lot, you know, you might have ice and things like that, but you really didn't have, especially with medicine, the quality of life that you have today. When you figure that everything that we have today, and one of the greatest inventions ever is not something people think of, the sewage treatment plant systems, mm-hmm. which just the fact that they exist today, the disease that is not prevalent is just incredible. And you think then, you know, my parents that are still alive today, when they grew up, there was no antibiotics.
Right. Well, next year, with the Stanley Cup, you know, going on, next year will be 100 years since the 2019 playoffs, where they basically canceled the playoffs because so many were, in fact, one of the coaches got sick, very sick with the flu. It was the flu epidemic. Right. And that outbreak was the only time they did not award the Stanley Cup.
When I read the biography about Lewis and Clark and their expedition and all that, they talked about their early lives. And one thing that they mentioned that really never has been transferred information-wise, the impact of how people thought, for example, the late 1700s, mm-hmm. That's really the formation of our country, was the paranoia that everybody had of dying constantly.
Yeah, right.
Because if you broke an arm, if you cut yourself, if you did something, the infection came in, so many people died. Mm-hmm. And there was a constant fear of death because so much of the labor and so many of the things that you did was labor intensive that people, if they got injured or got an infection, that was it. They were gone.
Right.
And that, they said, that really hasn't been transferred to our generation hundreds of years later, just how great we have it. What an incredible quality of life the majority of us have for a long, 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 long time that it really isn't appreciated. But if you went back to that, you know, back then and came to now, you would really see the difference just psychologically that it has in a society.
Mm-hmm.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Drivers, you need a tuning solution? What's new from Bully Dog? Justin Burt from Bully Dog has the details.
So we've got a couple of turbos now. We've got a Stage 1 Detroit turbo for some of the guys out there running the Detroit power plants. It is a stock style, but it's non-wastegated. So you're going to build a little more boost, a little more quick in the RPM range. You're going to make that power a little sooner than you will with the stock turbo. We've also got our CAT Stage 1 turbo, which is a 78-millimeter billet unit, and it also comes in a 132 exhaust housing that's been popular for some of our CAT CAT guys, but we've also got this stage two coming. Those should land in the warehouse sometime in the 1st of May and be ready to ship out in the weeks following. So that is also a 78 millimeter billet unit, but it actually has a 145 exhaust housing. So you're going to make a little more power. You're going to make a little less heat. And you're going to use a little bit less boost to make more power. So it's definitely a more efficient unit. We've been working on it for a while. We've listened to some of these guys out here making a little more power than stock, and this is that option for them. So the website, bigrig.bullydog.com. You can check out our Facebook page for applications and announcements for product support, and our Instagram as well.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Carley. Okay, one more note. The retaliation on tariffs has started. Mexico announcing a 20% tariff on pork. The majority of that pork that comes from Iowa, already before they put the tariff on, there was a tariff on Chinese pork, American pork going into China. Mm-hmm. And just the talk of steel and aluminum tariffs, this according to Iowa State University, that just the talk of tariffs over the last couple of months has caused a loss of $560 million to Iowa pork producers. So, you know, when people say, well, you know, it may be a negotiating tactic, remember, even a negotiating tactic, when you talk about it in the marketplace, when the president talks about it, has an impact. And what happened was, because he was talking about steel and aluminum tariffs, they knew it was going to be addressed, that the tariffs were going to come at pork. Therefore, what did they have to do before this happened? They lowered the price drastically of pork in order to sell it, to get it out to as many markets as possible. And the losses that they took, even though they sold a lot of the pork, right now is up to $560 million losses to Iowa pork producers, according to Iowa State. So there are consequences to any tariff that you put in. People in the United States, including consumers and producers of certain goods, will be hit. And it's no coincidence that they went after pork. Iowa.
Yep, that's where the presidential election season begins. They know that. They also know it's the heartland. There's a lot of support there for the president. And they know there will be pressure because the pork industry, I mean, the pork producers, especially in Iowa, it's a fairly strong, but also has been a very... I don't want to say vocal, but very active, I think, in not only promoting their industry, their product, which they should do, but also politically. You know, so you can bet that there will be calls to the White House on this. Question is, will they address this, the tariffs at the G7 this Friday and Saturday? I'm guessing there might be a few things said there.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.